In his message Sunday, in which he commemorated the outbreak of World War II 70 years ago and spoke of the role of religions in promoting forgiveness and reconciliation, Pope Benedict sent his best wishes to participants of an ongoing international congress in Krakow, Poland. The congress, organized by the Archdiocese of Krakow and the community of Sant'Egidio, sees the participation of some 500 key religious figures gathered in a common prayer for peace. The meeting, entitled The Spirit of Assisi in Krakow, aims to launch yearly interreligious supplications to make the earth a peaceful place for all. And you may remember, similar events took place every year in Assisi during the lifetime of Pope John Paul II. My Italian colleague Stefano Leczczynski is in Krakow following the Congress. He caught up with Rabbi David Rosen, director of the American Jewish Committee's Department for Interreligious Affairs. He pointed out that the theme of the Congress is dialogue to improve and reach reconciliation among people, and began by asking Rabbi Rosen, how can this work?
Well, every journey begins with a step, and the community of Sant'Egidio is really very much a pioneer in this field of engaging the religious communities, especially what you might call the hardcore communities. In the past, interreligious dialogue has generally been an engagement of the liberal fringes. This does not make it in any way less important, but it has not really impacted upon the more traditional segments of the community. And this has been part of the brilliance of the approach of the community of Sant'Egidio, to be able to reach out and overcome the suspicions and fears, mainly historical fears, within different communities so that they can be more profoundly engaged in these relationships. If we take the historic initiative of John Paul II in Assisi in 1986, at that meeting there was no representative of the chief rabbinate of Israel. And it was only with John Paul II who initiated the first formal dialogue between the chief rabbinate of Israel and the Holy See. But that, in many respects, came about because the community of Sant'Egidio took up this initiative after 1986 and started initiating these contacts to bring the different communities together. As a result, if I talk now within my colleagues within the Orthodox rabbinate, there is more understanding of the Christian world today, more desire for engagement, not only with the Christian world but with other communities, more involvement in interreligious dialogue than ever before. And this therefore changes perceptions. It overcomes prejudices, it overcomes bigotry, it opens up new opportunities, and therefore religions as a result can play a more constructive role in not only influencing their societies, but in supporting political initiatives to be more successful. In my opinion, one of the reasons for the failure of peace initiatives in my part of the world, in Jerusalem and in the Holy Land, has been a failure to engage religion. I understand why politicians have avoided religious institutions. When you see terrible things that are done in the name of religion, then you think that the right thing to do is to avoid it. But that is a fallacy. All aspects of nature abhor a vacuum. If you don't want religion to be part of the problem, you have to make it part of the solution. It has to be engaged in the positive processes. Religion needs to support positive political initiatives. And through interreligious dialogue, we bring the religious voices more into the public square of engagement on these issues.
How it is possible to improve the dialogue among religious leaders and political leaders? Because you were saying that the mistake was that the political part did not involve enough the religious leaders and the religious communities. But often it seems that there is absolutely no dialogue between the political part and the religious part. Exactly. So which way and which method could be assumed?
Well, I think you have touched upon a really critical question. And if I knew the complete answer to that, I would be very, very happy. All I know is that we have to make every effort to try to ensure that there is more engagement between political leadership and religious leadership. And there are ways in which we are trying to do that. Specifically in the Middle East at the moment, we have formed a council of the religious institutions of the Holy Land that involves Muslim leaders of Palestinian society, the patriarchs, the bishops, and the chief rabbinate of Israel. And we have tried to organize meetings with political leadership in order to emphasize and make it clear to them how important it is to engage these religious leaders. Religion is not the same thing in every part of the world. Religious leadership does not have the same role in every part of the world. In some places, it really is the leading force. Other places, it's, if you like, an underlying social force. And in our part of the world, in the Middle East, especially Muslim and Jewish leadership is to some degree subject to political authority. But the fact that it does not provide prophetic leadership does not mean that it is insignificant, because it still represents the core identities of the peoples involved, and therefore it's necessary to engage it. And this is very difficult for secular politicians to understand. Most secular politicians are suspicious of religion, if not hostile to religion, and therefore we have to work hard to overcome their prejudices, as well as the capacity of the religious leadership to understand that they need to be engaged. This is a process, and we have to keep working at it. Unfortunately, those like myself who are working on this process are pioneers, and this is a new development which some politicians grasp. I would actually say Well, in some parts of the world, this is an understanding that comes more naturally. But in many parts of the world, it's very difficult to get this message across. And we just have to be determined to work at it harder and harder.
Talking about one of the themes of the meeting, the beginning of the World War II, and its main symbol here in Poland, which is Auschwitz. Auschwitz is still a place where, of course, it is a symbol of horrible genocide and Holocaust of Jewish people, but it's still a place which can divide. Why it is like that?
Well, allow me, before I address this very important question, to also point to the fact that to be here in Krakow, in Poland, 70 years after the Second World War, is itself a manifestation of triumph, of hope over destruction. And that's very much personified in the person of the late John Paul II. And nations that were enemies and were totally filled with hate for one another now cooperate, and even there is warmth between them, and you have now such a totally new spirit. So just being here at this particular moment in time is a testimony to the triumph of hope over destruction. Now, with regards to Auschwitz specifically, all memories, as almost all aspects of life, have their positive and negative potential. The Bible, Pentateuch, the Torah, emphasizes the importance of memory. We are always told, remember, you were a stranger, you were a slave, you suffered in Egypt. Why are we meant to remember it? Because the Torah, the Bible says, so that you will be sensitive towards other strangers, towards other marginalized people, and that you will therefore develop a positive moral lesson from it. According to Jewish tradition, over 36 times we are reminded that we were strangers in the land of Egypt and to be sensitive to others. Why so many times? The Talmud says, because there is the danger that you may use your history to be insensitive instead of to be sensitive. People can go through a traumatic experience and say, I've been such terrible trauma, why should I care for somebody else? Nobody cared about me. Or I am still wounded and I'm still hurting and still nobody cares about me. They still hate me, therefore I turn my back on them because they turn their back on me. So any experience can have its positive and its negative dimensions. And when people are wounded and they are in pain, and pain can last a very long time, when they can be victims of trauma. So the challenge is how to ensure that memory does not imprison you, but memory inspires you, motivates you to be more expansive, more compassionate, more engaging. So this is a perennial challenge. It's not just in Auschwitz, it's in every experience of pain and of suffering. But because Auschwitz embodies, as you said, the ultimate suffering, but unparalleled, arguably, in the whole of human history, so the capacity both to imprison and to inspire is greater perhaps than anywhere else. And it's really important for our communities, for the Jewish community, to see our leaders engaged with other religions and with other communities at Auschwitz to emphasize that here, yes, there are particular lessons, but there are above all universal lessons that we must bring to as guidance for humanity at large.
You've been listening to Rabbi David Rosen, Director of the American Jewish Committee's Department for Interreligious Affairs. The English program will be broadcasting the second part of that interview during upcoming programs.